Fine. If he was wrong and his eyes lied, he had a gun that would do the job splendidly.
I end it now.
If he didn't, he might not ever. He might calm down, feel better for a while. But then, it would be more of the same. He never believed in spirits that carried on, or in heaven. But he did believe in hell. He had been living there for years uncounted. The flames may have been metaphorical, the pain and suffering inside instead of out. But those things weren't what made hell what it was, as much as endless repetition. The last remnant of the man inside the monster conjured the image of Gary. He locked up, trembling violently in indecision.
"Here's God,"
said his voice from across the kitchen, and he looked bloody crazed, wide eyes set in dark circles. He saw himself.
"He's dead, and you know it."
"What? No, he's upstairs. Gary's upstairs."
"All that noise would have brought him down. We both know what happened. We took care of him."
"Oh, yes, we did."
"No.
I'm afraid so."
Another voice made Ed snap his head toward the office doorway. Detective Broward stood there in his charcoal coat and hat.
"Some have dark sides, Mr. Hoad."
"We took care of Barbara, too,"
his dark side said.
"Napping, that's good. Let's drink some more alibis. They're all free in your house of bones, brother. Let's drink it all."
Ed jerked his head up toward the ceiling, wailing.
"Gary!"
He stormed through the house, thundered up the stairs, tripped on a top step, tumbled into the hall, and scrambled into Gary's room.
"Gary!"
His feet crashed through a festival of matchbox cars, Lincoln logs, and little people. Between containers of Play-Doh and Pez dispensers, a platoon of army men lined the dresser. He swooped down for a look under the bed, jumped up and yanked open the closet. Stuffed animals and game boxes avalanched.
"Gary, where are you?"
"We took care of him."
Ed tore back through the house and outside, where Henry Boggs stiffened on the walkway.
"Oh, Lord, what happened?"
When Ed ran around the house, Henry followed.
"Ed!"
Gary's bicycle lay in the yard, removing the chance that he had ridden off scared, as he often did when Ed lost his head.
"Gary!"
Pale, Henry moved his mouth with no words that Ed could hear. What he heard was Broward, who stood a little behind Henry.
"I think you murdered your son just as you murdered your wife."
"I didn't. I didn't kill my son. I didn't kill my family."
Henry backed away with his hands raised. "You did," his wide eyes said.
"Oh my God, you really did."
"I didn't kill my son! I didn't kill my family! I didn't!"
Dishes clanked, drawing Ed's gaze to the window over the sink. Barbara gazed back, curls snaking down over her face. Henry ran for his house, one arm up and hand on his hat. When Ed bolted into his, he found Barbara in the kitchen. Her hair disheveled, green dress tattered, skin pale.
"How could you?"
He took hold of her, and a chill ran up his arms.
"Are you all right? Where have you been? Where did you go?"
"Would you like to see?"
Her lips parted over jagged teeth. He revolted from her.
"You're not Barbara!"
A glow rose in her eyes, irises green and rippling, like holes in reality, to a place where green flames burned. He motioned for the living room. Buffalo Bob in his cowboy garb blocked his way, pointing.
"There's no place for you in Dutyville now, mister."
The kitchen filled with people.
"You didn't pay attention, and they ate me up. You let them eat me up,"
Gary said. Broward nodded behind him.
"Yes, I think we have enough evidence for a conviction."
Ed cupped his hands over his ears.
"None of you are real."
"Oh, don't you worry now, Edward,"
his mother said. In a frilly apron and gaudy dress too small for her large frame, she cooked on the stove.
"If I cooked them up just the way you like it, you wouldn't eat it anywho."
Plastic army men sizzled and melted on a frying pan.
"This is how you always take them."
"You are hereby convicted of eating your family,"
said Judge Freewin, who Ed once stood before after a barroom brawl in 1949.
Have you anything to say before we commence the sentencing?
Ed's fingers curled, tightened around his hair, yanked.
Not true. None of this is true.
Oh, how they hunger in that terrible grin.
Oh, how they hunger.
Barbara stepped to the side. From behind her came Ed's father, a gaunt man with a deep-lined face and a bullet hole in his head, while the others snarled and hissed, and Howdy Doody giggled in the window over the sink. His father cleared his throat and recited the text off a crumpled page as he might a Shakespearean passage.
The Indians told Robert Mauer that the land westward of Saffron Creek was bad, the soil tainted, but the land was no longer theirs.
Ed's dark twin snatched away the page and ate it. Ed barked as the crowd closed in, grinning with cannibal teeth, eyes filled with hunger.
Guess what time it is?
Howdy doody time.
Buffalo Bob shook his head slowly. Barbara cackled, a sound not sane or human. Ed felt frigid air, saw frost wafting out around his head, and whirled toward a black opening in the world. Arms rushed out, clawed hands gripped and pulled him through the door that slammed shut behind him. Demons take demon shapes. Inside out, Ed Hode went into the grim, now theirs. There, he suffered the fate of the Jazzamanglers. Murdered by metaphors.
This has been an audio presentation of Hode's Grim, the audiobook drama. Visit us on the web at www.jack-kincaid.com/enter-the-grim. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
This is Eddie Winters, and you're listening to Mutiny Radio, the same great station with a great new name.
Wow, cool.
What's cool?
The new name? What? I thought the radio's talking to me. That's weird.
What was weird?
This. I'm talking to a podcast. That's impossible.
Not really. This is Mutiny Radio. If you're listening, we're listening to...
Cool.
Mutiny Radio, the evolution has begun.
The following audio presentation is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead, events, or locations is entirely coincidental. This segment may contain mature language, situations, and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
You are listening to Hode's Grim, the audiobook drama.
Chapter 1. The Hammer Man. 19 years ago, shortly after he graduated from Barksdale High in the summer of 1988, Chad Hyman killed two people. With a pair of imaginary scissors he made with his hand, The enormity of it hadn't truly hit him until months later, when he was a struggling college student stuck with an art class that he was sure to flunk. Chad didn't know how to recognize or appreciate art, but was taken by a painting of the Fates, the weavers of destiny from Greek mythology, or so he was told. The lives of people, the normal, mortal people, where flimsy threads spun and snipped at the whim of the sisters. He never forgot that painting or the name of the one who did the cutting. Whenever he had stared at the scissors in the hands of Atropos, it brought him back to the night he had cut the threads of Roger Began and Stacy Kern from Sumner Bay, a small lakefront city 15 miles northeast of the Barksdale-Sutton Valley area. One could argue that what Chad did was an act of self-defense. It was either Roger and Stacy, or Chad and his best friend, Ben Norwood. Death already had 4 kids in its wagon and wanted 2 more. No one knew it at the time. No one ever knows when death is in attendance to make a claim, or which of life's little crossroads up ahead it might be waiting at. Around 3 in the morning, they stood on the driveway of a frat house in Sumner Bay, where a party was winding down. Their friend Alan had driven them there and left them stranded. Not that this was out of his character. The last group with a car had just come out. 4 kids from Sutton Valley, as unpleasant as the driver, Chris Purvis, seemed. He offered rides. Chad and Ben didn't know him, and neither did Roger Began and his girlfriend Stacy, who wanted a ride to the Sumner Bay outskirts. Between them, Purvis had no favorites. 2 people already in the back seat, his freckle-faced girlfriend in the passenger seat. He would take 2 more. Only 2. Chad and Roger wrangled over it. Both tall and strong, they stood on even ground, if words became more. Purvis had revved the engine.
"Bus is leaving, assholes,"
he had said, his face half hidden behind long hair, cigarette burning.
"You've got 30 seconds to sort it out, or all 4 of you can kiss my ass. Flip a coin or something."
Ben offered.
"Rock, paper, scissors?"
"Fine. You game?"
"Let's go." Chad didn't know any more than Roger that their hands had just become lethal weapons. Roger's girlfriend Stacy stood to the side, hugging herself in Roger's varsity football jacket. While Ben counted, Chad suspected that Roger would go with Rock. It was the macho thing to do, so Chad would do paper. One decision, however small and inconsequential it may seem at the time, could change a person's life. It could end it, too. But Chad changed his mind at the last moment. He came out with scissors. Roger Began chose Rock.
"The lovebirds ride,"
Purvis said, legitimizing it. Not long after, everyone in that car was dead, most on impact. Stacy was the last to go as the EMTs tried to extract her from the mangle of metal the car had become after being struck by a train. Only those who died knew for sure what happened, but the tires had left no marks to suggest that Purvis braked. Chad hadn't really known the 6 who died. He never felt guilty either, even if he felt bad. He never asked himself why he and Ben had lived instead of Roger Began and Stacy Kern. He never stopped to consider that he lived because fate had other things in mind, or God had plans for him, or any such hooey. Because that would have meant that some people were disposable, serving no purpose except to die or suffer to show the lucky people that they were on Earth.
for a reason. It would have meant that there was some intelligent but brutal design behind things, instead of a random mess of flimsy threads. People's adult lives start at different times. Chad Hyman's had started that night when he was 18, when all that stood between life and death was a drunken game of rock, paper, scissors. If he had stuck with paper, he wouldn't have gone to college or flunked out of it. He never would have met Patricia Guerin, much less married her with Ben as his best man. Trish wouldn't have given birth to their daughter Caroline or their son Buck. They wouldn't own a sedan, a jeep, and the modest house at 819 Hulls Hill Road in Sutton Valley, near the Barksdale town line. There would be no they at all. Through the years, whenever Chad stopped to take stock of his life, his mind drove him back to those crossroads in time, and the humbling thought came.
I am here because I chose scissors.
Crazy, but true. It flashed in his head the January morning that he read the obituary of Eric Pangsy. There was no mention of how Eric died at the age of 20, but Chad knew. An aspiring cyclist, Eric pedaled many miles a day, often on the back roads in a gigantic loop, sometimes on the lakefront trails or the paths that wound through the hills of southern Barksdale, far out in the boonies. Something went wrong when Eric came down off the paths onto Echo Valley Road. In that area, it slanted around a cliff. Eric had smashed into the guardrail. The bike stopped, but he kept going. 60 feet down. His skull hit the rocks. His helmet protected his head, but not his neck, which busted. Chad wondered at what point the crucial decision was made. Rock, paper, scissors. When had Eric chosen the wrong one? Eric was a cousin of Chad's friend Pangsy, who no one called by his first name of Paget unless they wanted trouble. 10 years back, in the construction days, when some called Chad the Hammer Man, and Pangsy just plain psycho. A foreman called him Paget during an argument over where to drill holes, and Pangsy floored him. His parents had named him after his great-great-grandfather, but their noble intentions hardly compensated for the ridicule they had condemned him to. Any time that Chad imagined having to grow up and write Paget Pangsy over and over again, hear it every school morning, he cringed. Chad didn't see Pangsy much anymore. They used to get together on weekends, usually at Chad's apartment, or more recently the back deck of his house, while citronella candles burned, and they would chew the fat over Budweiser's. Ever since Pangsy became a friend of Bill W., those weekend pissers had stopped. He never dropped by, and Chad understood why. Chad had become a bad association. That might have been a lousy way to think of it, but it was the bottom line. From time to time, they talked on the telephone. Never for long. Long enough to know that Pangsy had come to think of his cousin Eric as the little brother he never had. Chad also knew that Pangsy had been dry for 2 years, give or take. Considering he had just been laid off on the heels of a divorce, Eric's death had surely pushed him to the limits of Relapse City. If not, beyond. Chad had been quick to call Pangsy to offer condolences and lend support. It was the first time that they had talked. Really talked in a long while, and Chad realized just how much he missed their old weekly get-togethers of drinking buds and pitching the cans over his back railing. But those days were gone forever. Nowadays, Chad drank alone, or went to Frick's Pub in downtown Barksdale with Danny Rothman. They weren't as close as Chad had been with Pangsy, but they were friends as well as co-workers. Working full-time and on-call 24/7, Chad had been with the crew the longest. He answered only to Henry Boggs and the head manager of his interests, Stuart Sheldon, whose responsibilities continued to grow as Henry's mind faded. The old man owned 35 rental properties, mostly houses, but also 5 commercial buildings and an apartment complex. That translated into plenty of work for the small crew of men who handled repairs, maintenance, and whatever else needed to be done. For the past months, ever since Danny Rothman was caught driving stoned and with a bag of grass in his glove box, the first thing that Chad did after he left his house was swing through the Barksdale Square to pick Danny up. Sometimes Danny was late, never by much, until January 5th. Snow came down in big, fluffy flakes, sailed through the air dreamily, as if a gigantic down pillow had been torn open in the heavens, covering the cracked sidewalks in battered benches, garnishing the decrepit fountains, and sorry excuse for a gazebo. It rendered the Barksdale Square fit for a postcard photograph. It also made for a slushy mess of the roads. When Chad didn't see Danny at his usual spot near the post office, he supposed the weather caused a hitch. Chad circled the square many times before he dug out his cell phone. He advanced through the numbers in memory until he reached those of the crew who all had cells at Stuart's demand, compliments of Sutton Valley's own screwy Valley Mobile cellular service, a retarded child of the local phone company. He selected Danny's number. Searching for signal, the display told him, "All right, that's it."
"That's it, Stu. You can shove your support in your local business shit right back up your horn where it came from."
Finally, the number dialed and rang.
"The cell phone of this subscriber cannot be reached at this time."
And he supposed that Danny had either shut it off again or Valley Mobile was farting obliviously in its lazy chair.
"Leave a message after the tone or press 1 to send a numeric page."
He hit 1. Pages were the most reliable. Messages tended to lag when calls wouldn't go through for some reason. One eye on the road, he punched in 987-6543-210, which meant in English, "Call Chad or he's coming to hurt you." He opted not to drive to Danny's place for fear of missing him, decided to give Danny 15 more minutes, and parked his Jeep. A big black hardtop monster like no other in town. If Danny showed, he would spot it. Meanwhile, Chad went into Jerry's News, where he bought a bottle of iced coffee and a pack of Camels. When he came out, he heard the hydraulic hiss and groan of a bus. His eyes followed it as it pulled away from the stop. Chad remembered all the times that Danny talked about fighting the urge to hop on that bus, ride it to wherever, and not look back. The call of his drifter nature, Chad had supposed. Though Danny had found a woman who was easy on the eyes and loved him, Chad watched the bus trundle down Main Street and had to wonder.
"Chad!"
Danny stood on the curb across the street, late 20s, well-built, his face scruffy, long hair and a bushy ponytail. He scooted through a gap in traffic. Chad shook his head.
"I was gonna give up on you."
"I saw your page. Tried to call. Wouldn't go through. Sorry. Kept hitting the snooze and Nina..."
"I don't care. You're here. Let's go. We're behind."
Chad climbed into his Jeep. Danny got in and plucked a mini cigar from the breast pocket of his flannel jacket.
"No coffee?"
"No time. Miss Arnell on Saybrook has water problems we gotta check out. And then we gotta haul ass across town and help Art install a fuel oil tank."
He eyed Danny, averted his eyes, and fired up the engine.
"You look stoned.
Oh, man, give me a break. I do one stupid thing. I'm serious. Ever since then, every time I'm not bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, somebody says...
I didn't say you were. You just look like hell. Chad, join traffic.
I didn't sleep good. Sometimes I lay down and I get to thinking instead of sleeping.
Ah, still got the pop and the question jitters, huh?
Tonight's the night.
Gonna go through with it then. Good for you.
But how good for her? A lady like her should have all the good things.
Danny lit his cigar, and Chad lit a cigarette, one smoker triggering the other.
What sort of life could Nina have with me? Not the kind she deserves, I'll tell you that.
Let her decide.
What kind of wedding should I give her? A justice of the peace on somebody's lawn? Reception at some damn fire hall?
Cross that bridge when you get there.
I guess I'll save for it. Just like I save up for this day. I've got more Ben Franklins in my wallet right now than I ever had. I went through it yesterday, and now I've only got double digits left in the bank. What does that tell you?
What does it tell me? It tells me you best be careful with your wallet today.
I think she'll say yes anyway, but I don't know if it's the right thing to do.
If it's all about that, maybe you're right.
What else could it be about?
Chad shrugged. Love and happiness would be a sappy thing to say, and Chad Hyman did not say sappy things.
I have a wedding ring waiting at P&K's Jewelers, and I made reservations for the Firestone Inn.
Oh, hell. If you're gonna eat like a Rockefeller, you're gonna pay like one, too.
She's worth it.
Nina doesn't peg me as a sort to be impressed with the fancy schmancy.
Chad took a long drag. Women like that care about what comes from inside their man, not their man's wallet.
And I suppose you promised your wife over McDonald's cheeseburgers, right?
No.
See?
Chad turned onto Pond Road, a back way into Sutton Valley.
It was over Chinese takeout in my ratty little apartment. Candles, soft music on the radio. I made like I pulled the ring out of my noodles and played the, well, what do you suppose this is game? Well, Trish knew all right, but she played dumb. Made me say the words.
She liked that then?
Chad nodded.
Nice. You never told me that.
Well, you never asked. And it ain't your business.
So where'd you have your reception?
A fire hall.
Saybrook Road steepened as it descended into the valley that nestled downtown. When Chad turned toward the cul-de-sac, the Jeep slid on a patch of ice. The back end swung, and Chad feared it would take the rest of the Jeep with it. Down Saybrook, slewing and reeling to disaster. Tires sprayed slush, found traction, and the Jeep evened on the drive, which was littered with beef chunks and mushy broccoli and sweet potatoes.
What is all that?
Lost marbles.
With no regard to the sweeping view through the trees to his right, Chad drove past the first house where a kooky lady named Betty Morgan lived, and he pulled up in front of the Cape House, where his boss, Henry Boggs, had lived long ago, before renting it out to the Arnells. When his gaze swept across the clearing to the right of the house, he felt a cold flutter deep in his gut, a confused feeling similar to deja vu stole over him as if it called up a blank memory, a package that arrived in his mind but contained nothing. That clearing unnerved him because of it, and not, he told himself not, because of the house that once stood there at the end of the drive, a house that had given rise to spooky childhood stories over the years. The first man to have lived in it disappeared with his family and was said to have murdered them. The second moved his out after a year with no explanation or forwarding address. The third went crazy and burned it down. Those were the facts, the highlights, which Chad had retained. He let the rest fall by the wayside because it was poppycock, designed to lend weight to what were only coincidences, tied to one place. Coincidences washed fine with him, simply had to, for a man who owed his life to the outcome of a hand game, but he put no stock in curses or spooks. Chad grabbed his flashlight off the floor and a work light from the jumble behind the seats. Snowflakes sailed in when Danny opened the door and pitched the cigar.
Don't let her. Use the ashtray.
pick it up.
Litter? You pitched two smokes out the window on the way here.
It wasn't Abby's yard. You know how old ladies get.
Technically now, it ain't her yard.
I pick it up.
Chad stepped out, holstered his flashlight in his tool belt.
If not, I'll hear about it.
Danny retrieved the cigar.
So Abby's one of those, huh?
Well, she's fussy about some things.
Chad glanced across the yard.
Living next to Betty drives her monkey shit. Way she leaves all that food out.
Betty rents from the Boggs, too, no?
Nah, she owns the property. Boggs owns everything else around it, though.
Chad pointed around.
The land across Saybrook, most of these woods, behind and below, owns the land to the other side where the Hode house was.
He expected Danny to remark on that, but then he remembered that Danny wasn't native to the area.
He tried to buy her out once, offered her a lot more than what the property's worth, but she wouldn't buy it.
Can't say I blame her.
Danny looked around, sniffling as if he had a cold.
It's quiet. Nice view. I wouldn't mind living up here. I've always loved the woods.
I bet that hiker that disappeared a few years back was thinking the same.
Chad rang the doorbell.
Disappeared up here? These woods can't be that big.
Big enough, I guess.
They waited on the stoop. Snowflakes collected on their heads and shoulders, and Chad pressed the doorbell again.
Maybe she ain't home.
Always home. Maybe not up. I forgot to buzz her.
Chad fished in his coat for his cell phone. A chain lock clattered, bolt clicked, and a door pulled into Abby's face. Gray popcorn hair, eyes squinting through glasses, lips pressed together and moving as if sucking on an invisible straw. She looked incoherent.
Morning. Problems with your hot water?
Abby blinked.
What hot water?
Do you have warm running water, ma'am?
Abby eyed him over the rim of her glasses and gave a toothless smile.
That was sarcasm. Come in, boys.
They exchanged smirks and entered the house, which was well-appointed and spotless. Beneath the smell of cleansers and air freshener lingered a fusty odor that Chad associated with places where elderly people lived. What it was, he didn't know or care. Clad in a robe, Abby shuffled into the living room where the Today Show was on, and framed photos abounded on shelves and end tables.
It started acting up in December. Or was it November?
Danny sneezed.
Bless you.
Abby eyed him.
You better not bring any bugs in here, young man. Unless you care to foot a doctor bill.
Just my sinuses.
He looked uncertain.
Betty, next door, caught a bug that's had her in bed a week. I don't want nothing to do with that.
About the water.
Sometimes it only ran warm, on and off. Now there's only cold.
She settled into a chair and turned on a lamp with finger taps on the metal base.
Well, we'll have a look at the...
Have you boys seen Calliope?
I'm sorry, who?
My cat. She hasn't been home in such a long time.
Chad remembered seeing a cat prowling around the last time he was at the property.
Ah, the creamy-colored cat with spots.
She nodded.
Not recently, but I'll keep an eye out.
I could make coffee, if either of you would like some.
Well, that's very kind, but...
I'd love some.
No need, Miss Arnell. I doubt we'll be here for long. We should have the problem fixed up in a jiffy. Ain't that right, Danny?
Danny forced a smile.
Me in a jiffy.
We'll have to access the downstairs.
Chad remembered how Abby snipped at him the last time he was up to fix the toilet and didn't announce that he had to go downstairs to check pipes before he went. He gestured.
The, basement.
Is the same place as before.
Abby said, making Chad smirk.
If you give me a pencil, I'll draw you a map. Do you need one?
No, ma'am.
Chad led Danny through the dining room, past the opening that looked into the kitchen, past the laundry room door, and down the stairs, where the shadows were thick. He hit the switch at the bottom step. Nothing happened, and he shined his light at a burned-out bulb.
Remind me to change that before we go.
Why should you?
'Cause I'm nice. Speaking of which, I can't believe you're gonna make her stand up and make coffee after she sat down.
that she offered?
Because she's polite, and the polite thing to do is decline. Manners, Danny.
Chad said, as they traveled through the basement, which was as clean as the upstairs, everything labeled and neatly stowed in plastic containers. They reached the water heater, in the same corner as the holding tank and circuit breaker, and Chad hooked the work light onto a pipe.
Plug me in.
Chad scanned the tank with his flashlight, lowered the beam to the wet floor, and when Danny didn't move, he shined it in his face.
Today.
Sorry, I was thinking about Nina again.
He plugged the light into an outlet next to the fuse box.
You think too much, brother.
Chad inspected the unit, which looked to be on its last leg, and removed the burner covers.
The pilot light is out.
He tried to relight it, but it wouldn't stay.
Clogged line, maybe? Sometimes dirt.
Pilot line is fine. The thermocouple is my vote.
Chad checked to make sure it was tight, and it was.
If it is, it doesn't matter. We got leakage anyhow.
Danny pitched the work light down to the puddle on the floor.
That might be from the relief valve.
Well, some of it probably, but it's seeping from the base, out around the threads, too. Corrosion's been eating up the fittings. Give it a few weeks, a month, tops, and this horror's gonna be spraying. God damn it. It's gonna have to be replaced, the whole dang thing. And soon.
Like we don't got enough on our plate.
I might be able to patch it. It won't last, but maybe long enough till we get back to swap it out.
Chad pulled out his cell phone.
Danny, go grab the green toolbox from the back of the Jeep. The Teflon pipe wrap, too. Dig around. You'll find it.
Okay. You want me to talk?
I'll tell her. Just get the toolbox, like I said.
Danny started away and stopped, turning.
Hey.
Chad looked up from the words, searching for signal on his cell display, his face cast in blue light.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't take her to the Firestone.
Chad shrugged and smirked.
Well, maybe you won't.
Without another word, Danny walked into the shadows, disappeared into the black. Chad called Art Kroppel about replacing the unit, maybe adding an expansion tank, and talked for an unknown time before wondering why Danny wasn't back yet. Maybe he was having trouble finding the pipe wrap or decided to sneak in a cigar, but it seemed like a very long time since he left. Too long. When Chad went upstairs, he saw Abby in the recliner chair as before, but her expression made him stop. Her TV remote raised, mouth ajar, and eyes wide behind her glasses. She looked stunned, as if something gave her a scare or a terrible vision.
Oh, Christ, is she having some kind of attack?
Knowing her heart wasn't so good, from the summer they reshingled the roof, and she suffered an attack. He worried.
Is everything okay, Miss Arnell?
He glanced at the TV, which was off.
Miss.
Her eyes slid toward him.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Her voice was thin, hand trembling, as she set down the remote, and her eyes returned to the TV.
The things they get away with these days.
It must have been something.
Chad drew a few deep breaths. Before now, they had been shallow.
I came up looking for my partner.
She pointed toward the door.
He hasn't been back.
Chad nodded.
Are you sure you're okay? I mean, I could call somebody.
Abby rose unsteadily.
I should eat some fruit.
Okay. Will that help?
Breakfast. I just haven't had breakfast.
She passed him. He let it go and went outside. Snow from the sky was tapering, but the wind had picked up, shedding what had built up on the trees as they swayed and knocked branches. Chad saw his back hatch was open and walked around his Jeep.
Hey, Danny, you gonna...
Danny wasn't there. The green toolbox had been pulled forward. The rest of the tools and parts looked undisturbed.
What the hell? Where the hell did he go?
There was nowhere to go up there on the hill except the Morgan house. Anywhere else was a distance down Saybrook or a grueling hike up it. Head lowered, he scanned the footprints in the snow. Those from when they arrived were degraded, reduced to slight impressions. But the fresher set were easy to spot. From behind the jeep, they trailed off the cul-de-sac, close together, with drag marks. His eyes followed them across the clearing. Why he would go in the forest, Chad could only guess. Chad yelled his name many times before he rang his cell, using the jeep as a shield against the wind. It barely completed a ring before he got an automated message, this time with a male voice he hadn't heard before.
"The cellular customer you are trying to reach is out of calling range,"
the static-laden voice said, and in the pause that followed, Chad expected an "or" that never came. There was no "or has their phone turned off," "or is on another line," "or is unavailable," "or the ever-favorite and all-purpose cannot be reached at this time." No, the Screwy Valley Mobile Network said flatly he was out of range, which Chad would find miraculous, short of Danny finding a bomb shelter or falling into a very deep hull in the last 20-some minutes. A service tower stood 3 miles away. He couldn't get out of range by car in that time, much less on foot. Chad supposed it was just another testament to how wonky the service was. A voice cut in unexpectedly.
"Leave a message after the tone or press 1 to send a numeric page."
He tried again with the same result and left a page. Hours later, Chad got the same. By early evening, when he and Art were replacing the water heater at Abby's, Chad was furious. He called again, and this time left a message.
"All right, Danny. If I don't hear from you by tomorrow morning, or you don't have a damn good explanation for bailing out on me, you're out of a job. Friend or no friend, I mean it. I mean it."
When night fell, he was scrambling to finish his tasks for the day. Minus Danny, Chad had gotten backed up, and the FNG was at his other job, unable to be called in. Thoughts of throttling Danny came often. The anger didn't wane until he got a message from Nina, who must have rang him while he was on another call. She knew nothing about him being MIA. Chad told her what he knew and abstained from mentioning the occasion that Danny had planned. With a question mark behind his eyes, Chad went to sleep that night in the doghouse, his wife's lingo for on the couch. He didn't sleep for long. His cell phone roused him from a strange dream at 3 o'clock in the morning. Grumbling, he snatched the phone off the coffee table and looked at the number of the caller. It was Danny's. He answered.
"All right, Danny. Make it good. Make it very good."
When he heard only noise on the line, Chad supposed that Danny had bumped his phone and was unaware that it dialed him. That had happened before, a few times for Chad, too.
"Danny? Danny? Danny?"
He raised his voice, but not too much, so as not to wake Trish or the kids.
"You bumped your phone again, you bastard stiff. I know you're there."
Chad heard a dull, rattling sound, a bumping of many things, as if a heap of wood scraps and maybe bamboo had been disturbed. Voices carried over the line, too. Barely. They were whispering, almost hissing. If any words were said, he couldn't make them out.
"Danny."
His ears picked out the other noises, and his stomach rolled over. They were wet and sloppy sounds. He supposed he wouldn't be as disturbed if he knew what was causing them. All he could think of was someone stirring runny goulash while others ate, with their faces shoved in it. The last noise he heard before the call cut off and left him wide awake was a loud, metallic groan and thud, as if a heavy door closed on old hinges.
This has been an audio presentation of Hodes Grimm, the audiobook drama. Visit us on the web at www.jack-kincaid.com/enter-the-grimm. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
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 Each year, thousands of animals are abandoned and must be euthanized throughout Northern California due to lack of shelter space from pet overpopulation. Since 1993, Hopalong and Second Chance Animal Rescue has rescued, fostered, spayed, neutered, and placed thousands of companion animals. In the last 17 years, we have found homes for over 17,000 homeless and ill animals. Each story is different and many are heartbreaking, but in every case, there is a common thread, an animal that deserves a second chance at life and a permanent loving home. For more information, please go to www.hopalong.org.
This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Mutiny Radio.
Okay, let me get this straight. And folks, bear with me. We'll start the show in just a second. You, Hugo, our janitor, want to do the opening theme?
Yeah, I got the super-duper music looper computer program from Sony.
Did they pay you to mention that?
No.
Then don't mention it again.
Okay. All right. And it's for ages 6 to 9, and I thought that'd be perfect for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I come up with this opening theme for you.
Then let's hear it.
Okay.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4. This is the guitar part. Mm-hmm. Here come the drums. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty cool so far there, Hugo.
I'm going to do the vocal tape this second since the introduction's done.
There you go. Hardly wait.
Bells and a Bad Freak Show. Bells and a Bad Freak Show. Episode number 13. Bells and a Bad Freak Show. This is Bells and a Bad Freak Show. And I'm Hugo the Janitor. Boogie.
Hugo.
Waka waka wooga waka.
Hugo, I gotta get on with the show.
What?
Can you move it along?
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, get the show started.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'll get the floors.
You do that. This is John Bell, your genial host of Bells in the Bat Free, episode 13. If you've composed an opening theme song and would like us to showcase it on the show, which means play it for free and without any sort of copyright problems, then contact me at profsounds@hotmail.com. In order to add a little class to the show, in order to possibly hoodwink some celebrities into joining us, I have procured an audience. Actually, it's one person, but he's a professional audience. He's been in the audience of some of the great TV shows, everything from Joey Bishop all the way up to All in the Family.
Yeah.
And he is here now to be the audience for today's show.
Yep.
And, sir, your name is?
My name is Lenny Trapdell. Hello, everybody.
Tell me exactly now how this will work.
Well, I'm going to sit at the corner over here, and if I hear something that is appropriately entertaining, mm-hmm. I will clap my hands thusly. And if I hear something that I find appropriately humorous, I will laugh jovially.
Jovially.
Or even perhaps, ho, ho, ho. I could go all the way from chortling up to... guffawing. I rarely guffaw, but if it's worth it, I will.
And you are doing this free, well, not really free, in exchange for a plug for your website. So I'm going to give you that opportunity now to please give us your professional audience website address so people could go check you out.
Certainly. My address is, you might want to write this down if you get a pencil.
Yeah, got a pencil. Fine. Go ahead.
Is www.professionalaudienceforanyshowbusinessorentertainmentvenueunlimited1.com.
Why do you have the one at the end there?
Someone else already had the address, so I had to put the one at the end of it. So it's very important that you put the one at the end of it so you get my website.
I see. Okay, well, I'm glad we got your plug in. Now, if you'll just sit in the corner and do your appropriate audience things when the events warrant them.
All right, I'll just do that. I'll just sit over here and wait for something entertaining to happen.
Fine. I do have guests today. None of them are what you would call celebrities, so we're continuing our great celebrity search. I still have $11.37 in the kitty. why did you applaud there?
Cat ate the money. That was funny.
No, it's a phrase. Huh? It just means I have it put aside.
Oh.
Right now, I'd like to introduce... Something is shorting out. Let me see if I can find it. It's this switch here where the mic... Ow! I think shot my finger. What are you doing over there?
That's funny.
This isn't an act. This is real. Let me see. Arnie, can you come in here, please?
Yes, Mr. Bell, what seems to be the problem?
There's a short in the board here. It keeps going in and out on... Hear that?
Yeah, I hear
There's
that.
Some sort of short. I think it's here in the somewhere in the microphone
suite. Yeah, let me take a look there. Let me just kind of mess around with it. Whoa, look at it spark. Whoa. Look at all the smoke and the flames. That's pretty cool. that's pretty cool.
That's not funny, Arnie.
Sorry, Mr. Bell.
Just
fix
it.
That'd be funny. Okay, let me take a look there here. Yeah, there seems to be a short
in the
switch here. I'm going to have to replace it, which means that while I'm replacing it, you won't be able to use your microphone. So do you have something like pre-recorded you could play right now so I can fix this?
Well, I guess this would be the best time to listen to our newest Mr. Wizard episode. How about that?
Yeah, that'd work out
fine. All right, here's Mr. Wizard while we fix the switch.
Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, Mr. Wizard.
Billy, are you aware that many animals can hear sounds we humans can't?
Yeah, they pick up sounds in a higher frequency range.
Well, is that so?
Uh-huh.
Let's see if you can pick up this sound, Billy.
Okay.
Shut up. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Good. Then we can get on with the show.
Right.
We're going to do a test to find out how acute human hearing is. Billy, put on those headphones.
Okay.
First, I'm going to play a sound at a very low frequency. Tell me if you can hear it.
I can't hear anything, Mr. Wizard.
Well, maybe if you were to wait until I turned it on, Billy, you might have more success.
Oh, okay.
There, you hear anything?
No, just a low hum.
That's what you're supposed to hear, you little Billy.
Ow.
Now I'll play a higher pitched tone.
Oh, that's piercing.
Yes, that tone is at the upper range of the ear's tolerance, and the sound can be somewhat irritating.
Whoa.
Billy, are you aware
boy.
That music is made up of many harmonic ranges and sounds?
Sure. Is news to me, Mr.
And because the ear reacts differently to each set of sounds, humans react differently to different types of music.
Uh-huh.
For instance, let me play this over your headphones. Now, what's your initial reaction?
Boring.
I see. You find the music I grew up with to be dull and uninteresting.
Oh,
well,
boy.
Let's see how you like some of the music of your generation. You'll notice that just a little bit of rock music has turned an otherwise normal boy into a raving lunatic. His arms flail, his face contorts, and his words are unintelligible as he attempts to sing along. Parents, let this be a warning, and keep your eyes peeled for the ad in your local paper for the official Mr. Wizard Good Music 6 album record set. If you love kids like I love kids, you'll stop letting them listen to modern garbage, and you'll force the little thugs to listen to my music albums instead. Until your check clears, this is Mr. Wizard saying, bye-bye!
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, Arnie, that seems to work out fine. What'd you do, fix the switch?
No, the old switch was completely burned out.
So you had to replace the switch?
Yeah, but I couldn't replace it with a regular switch.
What did you replace it with?
I had to replace it with the clapper.
The clapper?
You know, clap on, clap off.
But Arnie...
Well, it's only a temporary thing until I can go out and get a regular switch, but we didn't have a switch, and I know you're recording your show there. I had to put a switch in it, but
Arnie, calm down.
Sorry.
Okay.
So I put in the clapper to cover things until we can get a switch.
So you mean if I were to clap twice, it would turn the switch off, and if I clap twice again, it would turn the switch on?
Yes, allow me to demonstrate. Two claps. On again.
I see. Okay. Well, I have to be very careful about that, I guess. Thank you, Arnie. Appreciate your help, and I'll holler if I need anything else.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. So long. So long, everybody. Bye-bye.
Wait, hold on. Stop. Don't applaud, please. Don't applaud. It turns the microphone on and
well,
off.
It is my sacred duty as an audience to applaud when I find things entertaining.
Look, why don't you just go home? It might be best
well,
if we
no,
did this another...
Do. I signed a contract, Mr. Bell,
but,
so I have to stay here for the duration of the show and follow my duty as I see fit.
All right. Well, let's see how this works out. Our first actual guest today is a woman who has a dog who says can speak. So will you please welcome? No, don't welcome. Just quietly allow her to come in. Miss Margaret Moudant. Hello, Miss Mudan.
Hello, it's so nice to be here. And this is the coldest reception I've ever received. Oh. I was told there was an audience in here. This is quiet as a tomb.
Sorry, it's a technical malfunction. Please tell us what it is that your little dog here says.
Oh, yes, little Fifu. Mostly he says, woof, woof.
Oh, woof, woof, yes. Don't applaud. No, please.
I don't think I deserve an audience reaction. Applauding. What is this? I don't have to put up with this.
It's a technical thing. I'm sorry, please. Little Fifi, Fifi, Fofo, Fum Fum.
Fifu.
Right.
Fifu,
yeah. Let's hear him speak, please.
All right. He will recite The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
The entire poem?
Oh, yes. He knows the entire poem. Would you like to hear it? Here we go. All right, Fifu, speak.
You see, this is the problem. When you clap, the microphone turns off and nobody can hear you.
How dare you stop me in the middle of his presentation? You see, that's how he speaks. That's how he was trained. I clap twice.
No.
Forgotten lore.
Twice to start and twice to stop.
I clap twice.
Don't clap.
I clap twice to have him start and clap twice to have him stop.
Okay, this could get a little awkward. He just won't do it if you just say... Go.
I don't know what kind of dogs you're accustomed to, but mine react to clapping.
I don't think this is gonna work.
Of course it will. Fifu, speak!
Evermore.
Your audience is missing a wonderful presentation.
Yes, it's amazing. Your dog is actually doing the Raven, but the people at home can't hear him. I'm sorry, but we're gonna have to... Oh, now what's going on?
What is
all that commotion out there? Hey, wait a minute.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell. What? My name is Agent Simmons. I'm from Homeland Security.
How did you get in here?
That's beside the point. I have come to monitor your broadcast for any materials that are dangerous to Homeland Security.
Why me? Why my podcast? What did I ever say that would cause you to choose me?
Because you mentioned Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte? I never mentioned Harry Belafonte.
Yes, you did. We have it on tape.
All right, well, let me hear it then.
Affirmative. Let me back it up here. Listen.
It's Fonte.
Harry Belafonte? I never mentioned Harry Belafonte.
Yes, you did.
I just said that.
And you admitted. Write that down, Hargrove.
Yes, you. Besides, as an American citizen, Mr. Belafonte can say whatever he wants.
And who says that?
The Constitution.
I'll have to look into that. Hargrove, make a note.
Yes, you.
But no matter his personal opinions, he can't openly threaten to poison the president.
Poison the president? Did he do that?
We found a formula for a poison in his writings.
What was the formula?
Hargrove, give me the notes on the formula.
Thank you.
It says, you put the lime in the coconut and drink it right down.
And when is he supposed to follow through on this dastardly plan?
We don't know. It just says it'll happen someday.
Daylight
coming, me want to go home.
Quiet, Hargrove. You're not on the night shift anymore.
All right, look, you can sit over there in the other corner and listen to the show. Let me know if you hear anything that's threatening to America, all right?
Indeed, I will. If I hear something suspect, I'll hit my alarm button thus.
Oh, that's quite an alarm.
It will give you fair warning to desist your current suspicious verbalizations.
Look, knowing that you're sitting there with your hand over that button could make me nervous. Things could get a little hairy. What did I say?
You mentioned Harry Belafonte again. Make a note of that, Hargrove.
Yes, you...
No. When I said Harry, I meant... Never mind. Look, all right, fine. I'll just stop mentioning it. Him. Whatever.
Fine. I'll just sit here in the corner. You won't even notice me.
Mr. Bell, what about me and Fifu? We've come here to perform.
I understand that.
And we want to perform.
But lady, that dog isn't an Afghan hound.
Afghan?
Is it? Make a note of that, Hargrove.
Listen.
Quiet!
Well, make a note of that, Hargrove.
Yes, you.
I am not going to lose control of this show. I'm going to be calm, and I'm going to take care of whatever happens next calmly and with a smile on my face.
Make a note of that, Hargrove.
Yes, you.
Don't you dare, Hargrove.
Yes, you. No, you.
Mr. Bell?
Yes, Ms. Schmackelheimer.
This is Ms. Schmackelheimer. Ms. Satan Schmackelheimer?
Yes, Ms. Schmackelheimer.
I have a call for you.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Although I find it difficult to believe that there are celebrities in Canada. What did I say?
She's saying Kennedy.
She's saying Canada.
Who's saying what?
She said Hussein. I heard it. Make a note of that, Hargrove.
Yes, she didn't say Hussein. She said Hussein.
Look, just take the
call, okay?
I'm sorry, Ms. Schmackelheimer. I'm having a bad day. Are you having a bad day?
No, Mr. Bell. A fun day.
Belafonte, I heard her say it. Belafonte, Harry Belafonte.
Everybody, just settle down so I can take this call. In case it's a celebrity, I have $11.37 for them, so please just calm down while I get this call. Thank you very much.
Hello, Bell's in the Bad Free.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have come to solve your problems.
And claim the money.
Well, yes, but it's for you, really.
Oh, well, thank you.
I